Accurate Blade Underground, July 22, 2007.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. Begin DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Spirit.
Right under ground, July 22, 2007.
Welcome to the monitor room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. I am Peter Franson, the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. And if this is your first time joining us, Spirit Blade Productions, we exist to bring Christian sci-fi and fantasy that's unsterilized, unsafe, and just kind of unleashed on your ears. That's our whole shtick. That's our thing. Welcome to our podcast. This is, I think, our fourth one so far, and I am really enjoying these a lot. Today we've got a highlight of a comic book. I've got a movie review, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. I'm going to be covering the Gospel of John chapter 10, and then I'm also going to give you some details on some movie stuff coming up, like the Wolverine movie and the Green Hornet movie and a couple other things. So we'll jump right into it, but first let's see what we have for updates.
Update information.
Okay, this week, we kind of started out with taking care of some odds and ends. Just like kind of, it's surprising to me always kind of like how long like answering emails and correspondence and just little things like that can kind of, you know, take up time. You just get working on those and they kind of lead you on different rabbit trails, and before you know it, your morning's gone, you know. A lot of, I would say the early week was kind of catching up on odds and ends that I'd kind of let go for a while. But that's always exciting too, because like I said, some of these little rabbit trails you go on, they can really open up cool opportunities and things you haven't thought about and directions that you can go, and so it's a good part of the process as well, even if it can sometimes be a little monotonous. I did have to reschedule an actor, the female actor that we have playing one of the evil characters in the story Dark Ritual, is going to have to come back next week. A lot of work I got done this week on two songs, Veritas and Used. And I haven't talked about Used at all, I don't think, here, but I'm playing around with incorporating live orchestra samples into the electronic music for these two songs, at least I think, and I'm having a lot of fun with it. It's kind of the right time for me to be trying it out. I had ideas to incorporate some more classical type sounds in the first Spirit Blade, but they just didn't they didn't work out. I wasn't ready for that yet. But as I've improved in my ability to mix things, it was the right time to kind of stretch myself in that area. So I have been having a blast doing that this week. Let's see here, and I think other than that, yeah, it's been a really good week in terms of productivity. I've got an actor that is going to be hopefully coming into town this weekend. He got called into jury duty, so that may cause a little bit of a hiccup, but we'll kind of see what happens there. But anyway, that's it for updates. Okay, so we're going to start out with some movie news here, and this is off of darkhorizons.com is where I got this info here. This first bit is from Comics to Film. Gavin Hood, director of the 2005 film Tsotsi, I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it, I've never seen this movie or heard of it, T-S-O-T-S-I, I'm sure it's some fantastic artsy film, and the upcoming Rendition, Gavin Hood directed both of those, He's officially signed on to helm the project. If anybody knows anything about Gavin Hood or either of those two movies or anything else he's done, I'd love to hear about it. Send me an email at pater@spiritblade.net. P-A-E-T-E-R is how I spell my name. I'd love to learn more about this guy. But anyway, he's to, it's, what project? What is he signed on to helm? Wolverine, the solo movie for Hugh Jackman. Let's see, production starts in November for a 2008 release, and Lauren Shuler Donner is producing along with Jackman. Let's see here, Jackman says, "I have long been a fan of Gavin's work and know he will make a masterful film with the character intensity and action beats the fans expect." That's what he told Variety. I guess this film, Tsotsi, won the Foreign Film Oscar. Oh, so there, that should probably tell you something. It sounds like it's a foreign film. So that's why I haven't seen it. But anyway, if anybody knows what language that is, too, that would be fun. Anything you have on this guy, actually, I'd be really interested in. The story will apparently shed some light on the character's origin and draw from several points in the comic books, including the Weapon X storyline. If you guys aren't familiar with that, part of Wolverine's origin, spoiler, not really his origin, but some of his backstory, is that he was, and you get this from X-Men 2 as well, that he was at one time captured and designed to be a weapon for the government, that they controlled his mind, and he was just kind of used to go out and assassinate people and whatnot. But anyway, so that should be in, if done well, that should be a really cool movie. excuse me, Knocked Up star Seth Rogen. That's the main guy in Knocked Up, if you've seen Knocked Up. I wouldn't recommend the movie. I mean, I don't want to get into a movie review here. It's kind of crude, but there's actually some things that that I really enjoyed in it as well. But anyway, that main guy, kind of chunky guy, and that's relevant in a second here, and writing partner Evan Goldberg are in final negotiations to co-write and produce the Green Hornet movie for Sony Pictures. Green Hornet follows the story of Britt Reed, a bored playboy who inherits his father's crusading newspaper, the Daily Sentinel. By night, he is a masked hero fighting crime with his sidekick, Kato, who has incredible martial arts skills. Some of you guys might remember the old 1966 show. I've only seen clips from it, and the only thing I know about Green Hornet is that, you know, when I tell people my favorite superhero is Green Lantern, then a few days later, they'll be like, "Hey, Green Hornet," and I'll be like, "No, it's Green Lantern. Green Lantern, people, figure it out." So that's, I kind of have a bitterness actually against the character Green Hornet, because people remember him over Green Lantern, and Green Lantern is so much cooler. But anyway, if it's a superhero flick and it looks good, I'll go see it. Let's see here. Rogan, here's the part where it's interesting, you know, that he's this chunky guy, is also surprisingly attached to star as the classic crime-fighting hero. A role that Hollywood hunks George Clooney, Mark Wahlberg, and Jake Gyllenhaal have previously been linked with. And by the way, the term Hollywood hunks, that's a Dark Horizons term, not mine. I'm just reading off their copy here. Yeah. So anyway, that's what we have for movie news. A review, or actually more of a highlight, of the comic book Knights of the Dinner Table this week. If I had to pick one comic book that I enjoyed, especially this week, it would be Knights of the Dinner Table. It wasn't a particularly great issue, but I was kind of disappointed by some of the other things that came out this week. All Flash was good. You know, it was cool, but nothing really exceptional. So I thought I'd highlight Knights of the Dinner Table. This is a comic book slash magazine for role-playing gamers. It's a comic strip that follows the continuing kind of storyline of this geeky gaming group and all the weird stuff that goes on. Sometimes it's freaking hilarious and I'll just be laughing out loud, and a lot of the times it's just interesting. You're just kind of following along with this game and seeing what the heck is going to go wrong next. You know, how's the GM going to get control of his game again, because the players are way out of control, you know. So if you're a gamer, you'll really enjoy that aspect of Knights of the Dinner Table. It's also really grown into a gaming magazine as well. It's got every month, it's got reviews of games, it's got industry news, it highlights cool things on the internet, you know, free websites where you can get resources for the games that you're playing and stuff like that. All kinds of cool little stuff that if you're a role-playing gamer, you will really enjoy. So I would really recommend checking out, if you're a paper and pencil RPG person, check out Knights of the Dinner Table magazine, and see what you think. Okay, and now moving on to my movie review. This time around, I'm reviewing Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Beware, there are some minor spoilers here. Nothing too bad, though. You can I'm not giving away, you know, major plot points or big surprises or anything like that. Anything that's intended to be a surprise even if you've never read the books. I'm not what you'd call like a Harry Potter fan. I've read a few of the books now because my sister is a nut for Harry Potter and has kind of cornered me into developing a mild interest in the books. I think J.K. Rowling is a great author, and so I can really respect that. But the thing for me is, you know, I'm not into stories where adults are idiots and the kids are the only ones that are empowered to kind of save the day, especially if they're really young kids, you know, like children, you know. You know, I loved that stuff when I was a kid because, hey, you're a kid, you want to feel empowered. So I don't begrudge any kid to enjoy those kinds of stories, you know. But as an adult, they just don't do anything for me. But as the characters in the books and the actors in the films, the Harry Potter movies, have gotten a little older, I've been able to enjoy the stories a little bit more each time because they're slightly closer to adulthood. And it also helps that each book also seems to get progressively darker than the one before it. I like dark stories where all is not well, you know. At the end of Goblet of Fire, no spoilers here, no plot points, but at the end of Goblet of Fire, we're finally treated to a wizarding duel where the threat of death was obvious. I mean, that was really cool, you know. I'm not into stories, you know, like my wife, when we were first dating, we told each other what our favorite movies were, and I told her Dark City, and so she saw Dark City, that's like 90 minutes, and then she told me Pride and Prejudice was her favorite movie, and not like the one that you could get, you know, just the average kind of movie length 90-minute one, but no, the A&E freaking miniseries that's like this 5-hour epic event. So that was what I watched for her to experience one of her favorite movies. And it drove me nuts because there was no threat of death. And I think I just need threat of death in the books and the movies that I enjoy. There's got to be a risk of, it doesn't have to be horrific death, just someone is going to expire unless something happens, you know. Otherwise, I don't know. Doesn't work for me a whole lot. The fight in Goblet of Fire was great, but it was all too short. But now, finally, in Order of the Phoenix, there's like a ton of awesome wizarding action in the last 20 minutes of the movie. I mean, if you think of the Yoda versus Dooku fight in Episode 2, in the same way, the battles near the end of this movie make the ticket worth buying. Now, as for the rest of the film, it's the shortest of the movies, despite coming from the longest yet of the books up to that point. I think they do get longer, but I haven't read any books after Order of the Phoenix yet. I'll probably be reading book 6. Is that the next one? 6? Yeah. Half-Blood Prince. I'll probably be reading that in the next couple months. But anyway, they did a lot of shortening of the book material, and you can see it through the choice of like quick cuts and short scenes that ask the audience to really infer and kind of figure out many of the minor details instead of taking us through them all with the actors and dialogue. There's a montage sequence that's used really effectively to cover Dolores Umbridge's kind of survey of all the Hogwarts staff. She goes around visiting their classrooms, and in the book, I think there was kind of almost an individual chapter for each teacher that she visited, but they covered it really well through a montage sequence in the movie. A few sequences and minor character introductions seemed off the beaten path of the main plot, even more so than they did in the book. Minor character concept spoilers, I guess, here. The pet giant, put that in quotes, if you know who I'm talking about, and the centaurs being two that kind of come to mind. It's kind of like, well, this is weird, you know. I'm guessing it's set up for the next book/film, and I haven't read Half-Blood Prince yet, so I don't know one way or the other. So I'll feel a little bit better, you know, if they follow through with those guys in the following books. But at the time, in both the book and the film, it seems kind of like, you know, out of left field, and never really dealt with completely. The actor cast is Luna Lovegood. At first, she didn't sell me on her performance, but after a few minutes, when I realized that kind of spacey, drugged-out look that's always on her face was an expression of her character and not the sign of a really bad actress, I really enjoyed her performance for the rest of the film. I thought there was a great moment where she actually had a little bit of blood on her mouth, and it didn't seem to faze her. She was just looking off into space, and it was cool. All in all, I'd say this is the best Harry Potter film so far. Among movies in general, I give it a solid 8.0 out of 10. Mainly because after all the great action at the end, I found myself wondering why they couldn't get to the stuff to that kind of stuff much earlier in the film, because it was so cool. I was like, oh man, what have I been doing the whole movie? It should have just come in the last 20 minutes. Even though I had enjoyed the movie up until then, when you realize how cool it could have been much earlier in the film, but, you know, that's not really nothing you can do about that. I'm, you know, you got to have the best stuff at the end, I guess, so... But anyway, I still don't have a rating system. I did get a couple suggestions that I'm thinking about and processing. I'd still love more suggestions. I'm getting some ideas, but nothing solid yet. So if you have a point system, you know, like instead of 5 stars or 10 stars or whatever, if you've got some kind of other object that would fit with our theme a little bit better, that would be cool. Or if you've got like a yes or no system, instead of thumbs up, thumbs down, you know, I don't know, like saved or serrated, I don't know. but something that'll go with our theme here. Yeah, saved or serrated is really cheesy, so forget I ever said that. That's really lame. Okay, so I think that's all that we have for our main feature.
Every word of God proves true.
Doctrine will set you free.
The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word of our God stands forever.
Doctrine will set you free.
Okay, this time in our continuing study of the Gospel of John, we're splitting up chapter 10 into 2 parts. The reason is that there's just so much cool stuff that we don't want to kind of just gloss over it. We want to be able to give the right amount of attention to some of this stuff. So you'll still want to have read all of chapter 10 for this week, because we're looking at something specifically that's toward the end of it. So if you haven't, go ahead and hit pause right now. Go grab chapter 10. It's not a terribly long chapter. And give it a read through, and then come right back here. We're looking... we've been giving special attention throughout this study to the character and claims of Jesus, because a lot of people, they like and respect Jesus, but they're really turned off by Christianity, you know, basically the philosophy, the life, the religion, if you will, that he started, you know. So we're trying to figure out if we can so easily separate Jesus from what Christians believe about him, if he was just kind of this good man, or a holy man, or a prophet, or if he was crazy, or if he was who he claimed to be, God himself in human form. So what's interesting is verses 34 through 38 in chapter 10 this week. You know, at a glance, someone might look at this and say Jesus is claiming, you know, no more divinity here than some leaders in Israel's past. Really, you know, this really kind of clinches it right here, that that he's saying, hey, if you guys called these people gods in the past, then what's wrong with me calling myself God? You know, but to understand the argument that Jesus is making, we have to look at the scripture he's quoting from Psalm 82. So flip over to Psalm 82, take a second and read that. And then hit start again. In Psalm 82, a picture is presented of God presiding over this assembly of gods. And I put that in lowercase gods and in quotes. The concept, you know, of multiple gods, of polytheism, kind of goes, doesn't kind of, it completely goes against the clearly monotheistic teaching of the Bible. So, I mean, what's up here, right? Well, the answer is found in examining the Hebrew word used here for gods, and you'll have to forgive me for my pronunciation whenever I go into Greek or Hebrew, because I don't know how to pronounce it. I just read lots of books. But anyway, Elohim is the word used here for gods. This is the most common Hebrew word translated as God in the Old Testament, but it's got a wide range of uses beyond referring to just the singular God of the Bible. And it's always context that helps us, you know, understand which meaning we're supposed to use here. That's something that that you find in the Hebrew language, is that, you know, some of these words have multiple meanings, and you've really got to look at the context to determine what they're referring to. Let's see here. In its plural sense, Elohim has been used to refer to rulers or judges with divine connections. If you look, Exodus 21, verse 6 is an example of that. It's also used to refer to pagan or false gods in Exodus 18, 11 and Psalm 86, 8. And those are really just two of a bunch of examples. And heavenly beings, we might call them, which may or may not be angels or demons. And for examples there, you can look at Psalm 8, verse 5 and Psalm 97, verse 7. So like I said, context tells us when it's referring to the singular God of the Bible, as the word will be accompanied by almost all the time a singular verb, making it clear that that they're talking about the God, and also that God is one and not many. See, looking at stuff like this is, first of all, I really love digging into this stuff. When I got to chapter 10 this week and I saw that, I was like, wow, you know, this isn't something I've ever really dug into before, and I really want to look at this and finally figure out for myself, you know, what the heck is going on here in this passage. So this, going through this study every week has been, I hope it's been good for you, but I know it's been good for me. It's really great. It gives me further motivation to really go in depth and really understand what's being said here in God's Word, because I know I'm going to be sharing it with others, and there's a huge responsibility there. But anyway, I hope you guys are enjoying this, because I really love an excuse to dig in and solve these, you know, mysteries. But this is a reminder that the book that we call the Bible is not a work of English literature, by the author King James, but it's a work with origins of different language and different culture. And, you know, there's a lot of weird ideas floating around out there because people are studying this book only as a product of the English language. And I don't know why we do that. We've just kind of, I guess, our, you know, white American attitude or whatever, we just, we forget that this does not originate with our culture. I mean, we may be known in some ways as a Christian nation, which that's a whole can of worms that, I'll have to talk about another time. But despite, you know, having so many Christians, and I put that in quotes, in America, this is not a philosophy and a theology and a belief system that originates from the English language. We've got to remember that if we really expect to understand what's being said in this book. In this specific case, since the English language apparently doesn't have a single word that can take as many different meanings as Elohim, we are left with, you know, the sometimes insufficient word God, lowercase even, to cover most of its uses. But even putting God in lowercase, it doesn't convey all the different possible uses of this word. Jumping back to the point that Jesus is making, we've got some new perspective now. In essence, he's saying if these leaders in history were called Elohim because of their connection to God or elevated status in the world, why would you say I'm blaspheming since I have been actually sanctified, and the word sanctified means specially set apart for the purposes of God? Why would you say I'm blaspheming since I have been actually set apart for the purposes of God by God to come to the earth, and I'm calling myself the Son of God? If anyone essentially has the right to say what I'm saying, it's me. And again, Jesus afterward points to the work he is doing as proof of his claims to having absolute and unparalleled unity with God. Now, I want to take a quick rabbit trail here on the phrase Son of God. This is really interesting. You know, it should be noted that, you know, that the Greek word huios, which is the son part of Son of God, that Jesus uses to refer to himself as the Son of God, it's got a very specific connotation to it. The word huios, it implies a relationship with God and a resemblance to him, a close relationship to God and a resemblance to him. This is different from the word technon, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong, but it's different from the word technon that is used to refer to simply natural offspring that may have no relationship or resemblance to the parent. You know, that technon is more kind of like, you know, your dad is the sperm donor, and that's basically the only relationship you have to him. Whereas huios is that you have a likeness to him, you know, you're similar to him, and you have a relationship with him. Now, what's interesting is that Jesus only uses huios when he refers to himself as the Son of God. his listeners would have understood that he was meaning something very specific and unique that no one else to that point had ever claimed to be. You know, the Hebrews might have said they were the technon of God, but when Jesus said, "I am the huios of God," then that meant something, whoa, do you realize what you're saying? I mean, that's insane. You can't say that, you know. So that's pretty wild to think about, that Jesus, he didn't just rope, just kind of put himself in with everybody else as being children of God. He said, "I'm something very specific. I have a very close relationship with God, and I'm also like him," you know? So anyway, that's wild stuff. The question for commenting on this week that I'd love to hear from you on, it's not really related to this chapter much. When do you feel the closest to God? Some people feel closest to God when they're reading scripture, when they're walking through nature. It could be anything, but I'm really curious to know, when is it that you feel closest to God? And there's not really a right answer on this one, so I'd love to hear from as many of you as possible. You can either send me an email at Pater@spiritblade.net, P-A-E-T-E-R at spiritblade.net, I'll keep your name, anonymous, if you'd like, but please include that in there, and any that I'll get, I'll share next week or sometime in the future. Or you can also just comment on the blog at the In Search of Truth segment of this week's blog. So there you are. That's what we have for Chapter 10. We're going to look at the rest of Chapter 10 next week. Okay, in closing, there was one thing that I wanted to do that I forgot about, but I got an email from Mind Spike. I'll withhold his real name because he doesn't know that I'm going to say this on the podcast here, but he sent me an email. We've talked a little bit over the phone about Green Lantern and Geoff Johns. He's not a fan of Geoff Johns, and that's fine. A little sad, but it's fine. He sent me an email in response to, it must have been I don't remember anything. I don't remember what I talked about or what I wrote on my blog, but I must have wrote at some point that about the Sinestro Corps and what's happening there, and that Kyle Rayner is one of the people that's been inducted into the Sinestro Corps. He's been corrupted by Parallax, and he's kind of the new Parallax now, and Mindspike said, "I rebel, I refuse to buy it until it comes out in trade paperback, and Geoff Johns has no respect for the one true Green Lantern," and anyway, we'll see. Ultimately, for me, it's just got to be a good story. So if they can make a good story out of making Kyle Rayner go bad, then I'll read it and I'll love it. I don't know. I don't think he's going to stay bad forever. That's just kind of my little idea here. But we'll see. Okay, all that comic book stuff aside, if you have any ideas for how to make this podcast more interesting or fun or just to add something to it, give me an email at pater@spiritblade.net, P-A-E-T-E-R at spiritblade.net. Or if my name is intimidating to type, info@spiritblade.net will find its way to me as well. Let's see here. What else did I want to cover? I think that's pretty much it. If you want to check and see, keep in touch with what we're doing at Spirit Blade Productions, go to www.spiritblade.net. We've got a blog that we update 3 times a week. We've also got Pater's Brain. That's another blog. That's just my personal personal blog where I talk about my geeky stuff and review games and comic books and stuff like that. So if that kind of thing would interest you, go to www.spiritblade.net and click on the weblog link, and that'll take you to the Spirit Blade Underground weblog, and from there you can get to both the podcast and the Pater's Brain weblog. Hope you guys are having a great week and that you have a fantastic weekend. We'll see you here next week. We'll see you here next week. And until then, and in all things, seek the truth.
Visit www.spiritblade.net. Green Lantern is awesome. Beta is a crazy freak.